Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, here we go. It is time for Fast Track. And let's see, one side of the coin. One side of the coin, Carlo, our mighty social media guy, is able to put together a Mason and Ireland online poker tournament. On the other side of the coin, finally, we've stumped him. Call it in the air, John.
Carlo is like undefeated with challenges. If we want him to do it, he'll do it heads.
Carlo comes through heads.
Carlo comes through again.
Funch.
Fast Track.
All right, Mace. New Falcons running back Todd Gurley will wear number 21 this season. And in doing so, taking up the number worn by one-time Falcons great Deion Sanders. While some might wonder if it's a tribute, Gurley actually gave an interview and said that he's wearing the number against the wishes of Sanders, who says he told him not to wear the number in Atlanta. Prime was hating on me. He told me not to wear it, Gurley said. If I was Prime, I wouldn't want nobody wearing my number either. When Sanders heard what Gurley said, he backed off and said, no, I don't care. He can wear it. Mace, we've covered Deion Sanders for years. We know he doesn't want anybody wearing that number. Deion probably doesn't think anybody should wear 21 in the whole NFL. His number hasn't been retired by the Falcons. The Falcons have never retired a player's number, but Sanders' number 21 is probably the best-selling jersey in Falcons history. Do you understand what Gurley is doing here? He's never worn number 21 in high school, college, or the pros. Isn't he going to rub Falcons fans the wrong way?
Yeah, I don't understand. What has he explained the significance of 21? If this was my high school number, or this is the number I ran with at Georgia, I mean, if any of those things were true, there would be some rationale. But it's almost like he's trolling Deion and Falcons.
The only thing I can think of to answer your first question was he wore the number 3 in high school, and he wore the number 3 at Georgia. But I think the number 3 is taken in Atlanta, and 21 was available, so he's taken it. But this is a terrible look for Gurley. Like, literally, I go to Atlanta every year, obviously, and if, you know, walking around, you still see people wearing Deion jerseys.
Yeah.
This is like the worst decision he could buy. Any number but 21 would be better.
I think Gurley's been in a salty mood since he got cut by the Rams. I think he has been. I mean,
well, okay, like let's be honest. Can we have a moment of honesty?
Yeah.
Even last year with the Rams, you and I heard a lot of stories kind of off the record, on background, that we can't say where we heard them, but that he was being difficult in his last year with the Rams, like taking himself out of games with no explanation, and like in key plays, standing, like sitting back on the bench when they wanted to put him in. And there's something going on with him. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, I don't.
He's a great player.
Either.
He's a great player.
He has been a great player. I don't know if that's in him anymore. I'm not sure what the Falcons signed up for. I do understand why the Rams cut him, and I think it was time to move on, given in part because of all the stuff that we heard. I think some Rams fans are upset because he's a big name. He's a big star, and the idea of him running for 20 all-purpose touchdowns is still in everybody's head, but I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But, yeah, you're right. He is kind of salty since he left. He was salty his whole last season with the Rams, and, you know, the thing with I guess he and Clay Matthews both talked about not getting paid. They're getting paid on the normal cycle. They didn't get their checks in advance of their deadline. But, I mean, raising
it's never a good look to complain about when you're a millionaire, complain about not being paid when,
especially now,
you're in a depression and basically, so I thought that was, you know, I like Clay a lot. He's been great whenever he's come in the show. Their whole family's been great. I just thought it was a weird look for them to bring that up in a pandemic.
Yeah,
I just thought it didn't play well.
Funch.
Fast Track.
Last night, NASCAR was holding a live stream of a virtual race, so it was NASCAR drivers playing each other on video with drivers able to talk to fans and each other on an audio stream in real time. NASCAR star Kyle Larson used the N-word after a technical glitch in the game. He said, "You can't hear me, N-word." Today, He's been suspended by both the Chip Ganassi Racing Team and NASCAR without pay. NASCAR said in a statement, "We have made diversity and inclusion a priority and will not tolerate that type of language used by Kyle Larson during Sunday's iRacing event." Now, question. We all agree, I think it's probably safe to say, that it was right for Larson to be suspended without pay. But here's the thing. Can he ever come back from this? Will he race in NASCAR again someday, or is this it for him?
It's a great question. I had this in my list, too, and the question I was going to ask you, which kind of ties into this is all, we should just take it all in now.
Yeah, put it together, sure.
Is what's the appropriate length for that suspension? He's already come out and apologized today, like you knew he would. He had to.
Sure.
But I remember when Kobe got in trouble for using the other F word, the one that rhymes with maggot.
Yes.
And he called a referee that, and he got fined $250,000. Immediately, Kobe, that was one of only two times in his career where Kobe sought me out. He came to me, and he said, "I want to go on your show today." And I said, "Okay." He goes, "Apologizing isn't enough. I need to have you guys grill me a little bit and me face the music for what I did. This isn't right." And I think that's if I was advising Kyle Larson, what I would say to him is people basically are forgiving, but you need to go on the offensive here. You need to reach out to, you need to get a publicist. You need to reach out to the fans. Like, I would go on Paul Feinbaum's show, which is very big in the South. I'd go on with Clay Travis, who does his show in Tennessee. I would go on with anybody. I would go on the ACC network. I'd go on ESPN if they'd have me. And I would say, "Hey, I need you guys." I thought the way Kobe handled that was really smart.
It was really smart.
He came out and said, "Look, guys, I got no excuse for that type of behavior. It just came out of my mouth." And he goes, "Until people like me who make this mistake come out and say it's unacceptable and pay a price for it and get a conversation moving towards that's not okay, we can't change it." And if I was him, I think the only way, going back to your original question, can he ever come back from this? He can, but he needs to go on the offensive. He should be doing every interview he possibly can today and say, "Hey, I made a giant mistake, and it's not okay. And the only way that we're going to change the culture about this word is to get it out of the vocabulary. It's never okay for a white guy to use that word. It just isn't." And I think then he could come back. But if he thinks he's just going to lay low
and hide from it, it's
never going to work. You've got to face the. I guess that would be my advice to him: is you can come back from it, but you have to face the music.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer. He will ultimately come back from this.
But this virtual tour has turned out to be really weird. That one guy quit last week
in the middle of a race.
When he got mad that some guy jammed him on the track, and this guy
dropped the N-word.
There's as much drama off the track as there is in a regular race. This might be the one sport that does translate to digital.
Yeah. Or is just opening Pandora's box and creating all kinds of problems, which it sounds like it did for Kyle Larson. But you're right. He needs to go to the NAACP. He needs to have conversations.
He needs to be Michael Vick with the dog fighting scandal.
Yes,
remember,
yeah,
the only way
does.
Michael Vick got past that was anytime somebody like wrote anything online or accused him of, he's a dog killer, he should be in jail forever, Vic would come out and say, reach out to them directly and say, "You know what? Let's raise awareness of this together. You're right. This is an unforgivable crime."
Well, and by the way, Vic works with the Humane Society and the ASPCA and has gone into inner city neighborhoods and talked about how violent dog fighting is and how he got caught up in it and how he's encouraging kids to not be involved. I mean, he's actually taken a really, really aggressive position if you asked the Humane Society if they've forgiven Michael Vick, they would say Michael Vick has become a strong advocate for eliminating dog fighting in inner city neighborhoods. So
one time when you were gone, I had Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, fill in for you.
Yep.
And we called the guy who he went into the stands with in Detroit and got in a fight with. Remember the guy? The guy's name is John. After it happened, Ron Artest said, "I lost it. I've got some mental health issues, and I lost it." He won one ring in his career, and he was with the Lakers in 2010, and he auctioned it off for mental health awareness. And he told people, look, a lot of people battle with mental health issues, and if you don't, you're gonna explode, and you're gonna do something like what I did, and you're gonna run into the stands in Detroit because I never talked to anybody about my issues.
Yep.
And now, I think you would agree, everybody looks at him as a mental health advocate now. The guy that got suspended for 70 games for running into the stands is one of the, you know, he came back and won the Walter Camp Citizenship Award for the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get past it, but you have to be proactive. The one thing that would ruin that guy, ruin Kyle Larson, is if he just thinks it's going to go away. It won't. You got to get in front of it.
Absolutely. Bunch.
Fast track.
All right, Mace. Manchester City, the English Premier League team, has launched an investigation into Kyle Walker, one of their best defensemen. Walker is facing disciplinary procedures after a report in the Sun newspaper claimed that he and a friend paid for two prostitutes to visit his house just hours after he issued a plea on social media to follow UK government advice and keep following the protocols during the pandemic.
Yikes.
Walker has publicly apologized, and the team has issued a statement which reads in part, quote, "We are disappointed to hear the allegations. Note Kyle's swift statement and apology, and will be conducting an internal disciplinary procedure in the coming days," end quote. Now, this could get tricky. Prostitution is legal in England.
Okay.
So technically, he didn't break any laws.
Thing he did was break the quarantine.
Right. He was just really stupid. They obviously are going to quarantine Walker and keep him away from other people, but nobody's playing right now anyway. Fair or unfair to suspend or fine this guy for a legal but really stupid hook up with two hookers?
My choices are stupid.
I said, is it fair or unfair to suspend or fine him?
I think it's fair to suspend and fine him.
He didn't break any laws.
Didn't break any laws, but he did violate a quarantine in a very, very embarrassing way.
Right.
In a very public and embarrassing way. So actually, I don't think suspension. I think a fine is appropriate.
Yeah, and I can't imagine he would fight it.
No.
And maybe give the fine to COVID-19 causes.
Relief fighters protective wear.
And, you know, it's just the look of him doing a video encouraging his social media followers to follow government advice and keep the protocols and then doing this anyway just makes him look like an idiot.
Yeah, it makes no
sense. So,
yeah,
I think what he should do is have his agent negotiate a big fine and give that fine to COVID-19 hospital workers and COVID-19 causes.
Sounds like a good outcome.
Win-win. Yeah, there you go.
I didn't realize. So prostitution's legal in Great Britain?
Yeah.
Wow.
Dave, don't get any ideas about moving to London.
Why isn't it legal here?
It's fair question. I mean,
it probably will be soon.
Yeah, it's probably a debate for another day. I actually took a class at UCLA called History of Prostitution, and the professor one day made a really compelling case to legalize it. His main issue was that a case had gone to court where the woman, you know, you say it's women will fall into it, and that's how you get victims in this situation. But this woman hired a good lawyer and argued, it's my choice. What I do with my body is my choice. I want to make money this way. And once they go on the offensive, it's a hard legal argument to depress. Now, Lindsay, I'm surprised. Would you be in favor of legalizing prostitution? Because when I bring this up to my wife, she shouts me down on it. She says, if you do it the way the world works, a lot of girls will turn to it because they have no place else to go, and men don't understand that.
So I think that if people are going to do that, they're going to do it anyways, regardless of whether or not it's legal. And there's plenty of studies. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there's a whole entire series about this and how decriminalizing it is actually safer. It makes the surroundings safer, and it makes everything safer for the women because they have like an actual network and way to, you know, to properly legally go about their business.
Okay, so what about the argument, though, that Lisa would make that is the country is, for the most part, run by men. Women are in a tremendous disadvantage in the workplace anyway. If you legalize this, a lot of women who aren't being given opportunities in the regular workplace will turn to it, and it will become it'll become so big we can't control it.
I completely disagree because, like I said, in other countries, it's actually worked out the exact opposite.
Okay.
And I think it's naive to think that, like, people who have the thought of doing this because they can't get opportunities elsewhere aren't going to do it anyway. Because just because it's illegal doesn't mean people aren't doing it.
Right. I mean, what's the difference between that and strippers?
Right? I mean, it's a big difference.
It is. But what would your wife Lisa say about that?
That it just that prostitution is more dangerous for the woman. That the actual act it makes it more complicated.
Think about having a strip club where it's actually a legal brothel, and you have bodyguards.
Oh,
and rules
guys,
and
I'm
all
not
that
even
kind of
sure.
Stuff.
I'm not even sure. I disagree with you. I think legalizing it, you can make a really strong argument. But Lisa was adamant. I mean, she was like, "Yeah, men would all say, yeah, go ahead and do it." She said most women would be more sympathetic. But maybe not. Maybe they'll be more like you.
I think we're actually one of the few larger companies where it is still considered a criminal act.
Countries, you mean? In the United States?
Yeah. I think there is, yeah.
I tend to be very libertarian, and I guess the crux of that debate is prostitution a victimless crime? Your wife, Lisa, would say...
It's not.
No, it is not.
Yeah, true.
All right, more Fast Track coming up for you. Funch has a question. Lindsay's got a question. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Rolling on with Fast Track, and Funch, it's to you.
Fast Track.
All right, guys, Lamar Jackson made some news over the weekend as he posted his new chest tattoo on the gram.
Nice.
And on the huge tattoo says the word family with a football on top of it, or what looks like some purple raven feathers. Now, he's getting killed by some... for the Raven feathers, because in this day and age of free agency and guys getting cut because of underperforming on their big contracts. Now, we even saw the GOAT Tom Brady, who everyone thought would be a Patriot for life, leave for another team. Now, guys, is this a tattoo Lamar could regret getting 10 years from now?
Of course it is. You know, he's pulling the Dave Singer. Dave Singer, when he used to produce our show, and Dave produced our show for many, many years.
D-Swing.
At the NFL Network. So...
D-Swing 1150.
One day, his license plate said D-Swing 1150, which at the time were the call numbers of the radio station we were on. And then his email address later said, or one of his Twitter handles was like, David Singer ESPN. And I went to him and I go, Dave, you keep tying yourself to these work situations, and you know that all work situations are temporary. You go, no. I could never imagine being anywhere. And sure, Lamar Jackson just tied himself to a work situation.
Yeah, I'm looking at the tattoo. It's a cool looking tattoo, but yeah, I don't know why you include
the Raven feathers, right?
The Raven feathers. I mean, they're specifically, without question, Raven feathers, and there's no guarantee he's going to play the rest of his career there. Although you would think he'll always be known as a Baltimore Raven, no matter what happens.
Well, think about it, though. Kurt Warner was got to the Hall of Fame, basically, on being the quarterback of the greatest show on turf, and then he played for two other teams. LeBron has played for four teams. LeBron!
Yeah.
Kareem played for two teams. I mean, almost every great player eventually leaves. So that's why it's kind of isn't the equivalent of, who was it that got a, was it... Brandy that, Funch, you would know, Quentin Richardson dated an actress. I think it was Brandy.
Yeah, I think it was Brandy, yeah.
And had, like, either she or he had a giant tattoo of their spouse's face on their back. And then, you know, 4 years into it, they broke up and they had to change it to a tattoo of a cat. You know, in essence, Lamar Jackson just got branded by the Ravens.
Yeah, I think you've got to be really careful with what tattoos you get. And by the way, that tattoo looks like it hurt like hell. He's got all the colored in part. Like, mine is an outline. I could never deal with the coloring in of the tattoo. That, to me, is what hurts the most. And that is like, all colored in.
Bergman has a bunch of tattoos, and... And I've asked him a couple times, are there any you would like to get rid of? And he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, but I have several. And Lindsay, you have tattoos, right?
I have like two small ones, but I wish I never got them.
Yeah, you wish you never got them?
Yes. No, I want to get them removed. Like, I will get them removed soon.
Do you mind telling us what they are, or would you rather not?
I have a cross, like a little cross with angel wings on it that's like on my back, like underneath my neck.
Okay.
And then I have one that's like on my hip bone, and it's cherries, and it's the stupidest thing ever. But it's one of those things where...
At the time, why did you do it?
Because... I think I got it because I wanted to. I had my sister's ID. I think I was like 16 or 17, and I had my older sister's ID. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, well, I can do this. I can go get a tattoo now. And my friend was getting one, so I thought I'd get one too. And yeah, it was stupid.
My wife has one tattoo, and the only reason she got it is when Mason said he would go get his tattoo, she said, you know, I've always wanted to do that. Maybe I'll go with him so he doesn't have to go by himself. And so Mace goes in and gets like a pretty decent sized tattoo. And that's the one you got on your chest, right?
That's one that's on my chest, yeah.
And so
it's
Lisa
over
goes
my heart.
Lisa goes in and I'm like, okay, I wonder what she's gonna do. She doesn't tell me anything about it. She goes, I'm just going so Mason doesn't have to go by himself. And she got a dragonfly, and it's maybe, Mace, what do you think? Size of a dime?
Oh, it's like on her second toe. I mean, it's tiny. It's tiny.
I don't even know if that counts.
She had a couple of wines, a couple of glasses of wine beforehand. I got stoned. And in the end, I was in that chair. She was in that chair for like maybe 20 minutes, and I was there for an hour and a half. I mean, she was back hitting the wine afterwards.
Right.
And by the way, isn't hers, it's like barely colored. It's almost not even visible.
No, you see, when you see it is when she's wearing flip-flops.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, it stands out because it, so it's funny, she has a niece, and her niece was saying that one day she really wanted to get a tattoo, and her parents were saying, you're not getting a tattoo, and I just immediately popped, you know, Lisa's got one. And they're like, what? You know,
oh.
But Mace, you don't regret yours, do you?
No, I love my tattoo. No, I really like it. Sometimes I look at it and I think, it looks lonely. I can see how somebody gets addicted to getting tattoos. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fast track.
All right. So I've got a game.
Well, wait a minute.
Guys.
Wait a minute. Did we get both Funch and Lindsay?
Oh no, we didn't get Lindsay. I'm sorry, yeah. Lindsay.
Forgot about me. I see how it is. I'll remember that.
No, you're up, Lindsay. Go for it.
All right, guys. So Dodgers pitcher Joe Kelly was in an infamous bench clearing brawl 2 years ago this week after he plunked Yankees first baseman Tyler Austin. This, of course, was during his time with the Boston Red Sox. The incident spawned a popular T-shirt at the time, the Joe Kelly Fight Club T-shirt. I bring this up because the now Dodgers reliever was a guest on the Brad Faux Show podcast this weekend, and he was asked to name five teammates that he'd want in his Fight Club, current or previous teammates of any time.
Okay.
And here's his answer, Funch.
Top five teammates. I'm going to go with Yadier Molina, Mitch Moreland, Austin Barnes, David Freese. I'm going to go with a wild card. I'm going to have to go with Chris Sale.
Chris Sale.
So I'm going to turn this now to you guys. After hearing his Fight Club, which five MLB players would you pick to be in your own personal Fight Club?
In other words, I want to see it because the first rule of Fight Club we're breaking right now.
You never talk about Fight Club.
Right. But are we watching? The idea is that they're going to fight against each other, or they're fighting us?
No, they're gonna. I think the idea is like guys that you want to fight with you.
Oh,
guys
okay,
you want
got
on your side.
Got it.
I'm trying to think. There is a player in Cincinnati. I don't know if he still plays for the Reds. And it's one of the craziest videos you will ever see. His name is Amir Garrett. And he tries to fight the entire Pirates team. This was in a game last year. The Pirates were notorious for throwing at people. And, you know, Clint Hurdle, their manager, was, known for this. And so they had thrown at a bunch of Reds. One of the Reds had hit like three home runs. And so they started throwing at him. And so Amir Garrett, the first Pirate that came up, he threw at him. and the dugout yelled at him, and he walked towards the Pirates dugout and said, "I'll fight every one of you MFers."
You know who else was in that fight with him, actually? Was Yasiel Puig.
Well, that's who I would want on my team.
Yeah, Yasiel Puig I would want on my team.
Yeah, Puig is a tank.
From the veterans category, I would take Matt Williams, who still, I remember from a brawl, is a tough son of a gun. So Yasiel Puig, Matt Williams.
Who else would be? I'm trying to think of guys that were just giant in size. Bonilla was a giant.
Aaron Judge.
Yeah, Aaron Judge is like a house.
Who's a blockhead? Who is just a blockhead?
I'm trying to think. Remember, was it Jason Veritek who used to try and fight everybody? You know, when he was behind home plate. Remember he would just anybody that would argue he would fight with. I think he was Ty Cobb was accused of murder once, right?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
He'd be
he was a badass.
It is and it's not.
All right, now Mace, you'll know why.
Nolan Ryan would be great in a fight club.
You know who else I'd want on my team? Frank Robinson. He once got in a fight. He once got it. Didn't he get in a fight in a father-son game?
Yeah.
You
know who I'd want on my fight team, fight club team, is Don Zimmer. Because I just remember Don Zimmer, Pedro Martinez grabbed him by the ears and threw him on the ground. Do you remember that one fight?
And Zimmer didn't care.
Pedro would be great in a fight club.
Lindsay, Albert Bell was pretty crazy back in the day in Cleveland.
Yeah, he was. He'd be a good one. Big guy. I was thinking Barry Bonds would probably be a good one.
Oh, Barry Bonds. Talk about blockheads, yeah.
And Jose Canseco, he'd probably be a good one, too. He seemed like he was always ready to fight.
And plus he might be roided up, so, you know, he could fight longer.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good question. But that Amir Garrett is where I would start. That video, if you've never seen it, Google Amir Garrett fight Pirates and watch what comes up. It's unbelievable. He takes on the whole team.
And if you've never seen the Don Zimmer Pedro Martinez fight, just Google Don Zimmer ears and it'll pop right up. Just grabs him by the ears and throws him on the ground. All right, more Fast Track coming up next for you. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, rolling on with Fast Track, and it's to me. All right, so
Fast Track.
I've got a game. Believe it or not, yesterday was Easter. So I've got
It didn't feel like it.
I've got some day after Easter questions, day late Easter questions for you.
Okay.
Funch, you can play. Lindsay, you can play. All right, number one. Why were eggs originally dyed on Easter? Was it A, to find them easier, 2, to represent the blood of Christ, or 3, to symbolize spring and a new beginning? Ireland.
3, C.
C, to symbolize a spring and a new beginning. Lindsay.
Number 1.
To find them easier. And Funch.
Symbolize spring.
The correct answer is to represent the blood of Christ. You guys.
Ooh, 0-3.
Yeah. All right. Good Friday is considered a federal holiday in how many states? 12, 27, or all of them? Lindsay, starts with you.
Which states?
No. 12, how many states
27, or all of them?
Consider it an official federal holiday.
I'm going to say all of them.
All of them. Funch.
I'll say 27.
27. Ireland.
I'll say 12.
Only 12. You are absolutely correct. Ireland is on the board. 1-0. All right. Americans consumed how many jelly beans yesterday? Was it 5 million, 16 million, or 30 million? 5 million, 16 million, or 30 million jelly beans yesterday? Funch?
16 million.
16. Ireland?
30.
30. Lindsay?
I think it's 32.
It is only 16, but that is still enough jelly beans to circle the globe twice. Number 3, it wasn't until the 1700s that the egg-laying bunny arrived in the Americas, and it arrived from what country? Was it A, Germany, B, Scotland, C, Russia? Where did we get the Easter bunny? Funch.
Scotland?
Scotland, Ireland.
Germany.
Germany. Lindsay.
No, I'm going to say Russia.
A correct answer, Germany. Ireland is taking a 2-1 lead over Funch. Lindsay, you are scoreless. All right. Easter is only the second biggest candy-consuming holiday, right behind what other holiday? Is it A, Christmas, B, Halloween, C, Valentine's Day? Ireland, we're back to you.
Halloween.
Halloween. Lindsay.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day. Funch.
Halloween.
Halloween's the correct answer. Lindsay, you're scoreless in this game. Ireland 3 and Funch 2. All right, what is the most popular Easter candy? Is it A, chocolate eggs, B, jelly beans, C, Peeps? The most popular, the most sold Easter candy. Let's see, we start with Lindsay. You need one, Lindsay.
I'm going to guess Peeps.
Peeps. Funch.
Peeps.
Peeps. Ireland.
Chocolate eggs.
Nope, it's Peeps. You went wrong. Ireland and Funch tied at 3. Lindsay with 1. I've got 2 left. 2 of these are left. What percentage of people, when given a chocolate bunny, take a bite out of the ears first? Take a bite out of the ears first. Is it 35%, 76%, or 95%? Funch, we start with you.
I'll say 76%.
76% take a bite out of the ears first. Ireland.
95%.
95%. And Lindsay?
76.
76. The correct answer is 76%. 5% eat the feet first, and 4% eat the tail first. All right. And the last one. Instead of an Easter bunny, Australians have the Easter what? Is it A, the kangaroo, B, the bilby, which is a tiny animal with large ears, or C, a duck? A kangaroo, a bilby, or a duck? Funch, you go first. You have a lead.
Kangaroo.
Kangaroo it is. Ireland.
I just don't think that you could make up the bilby. I'm going with the bilby.
The bilby. Lindsay?
I'll guess the duck.
The correct answer is the bilby. It is a tiny marsupial with large ears. It is close to extinction, except on Easter, where it comes out and delivers eggs. All right, there you have it. There is a day late for Easter game. Ireland?
Easter bilby.
Fast track.
All right, Mace. The Rams don't have a first-round pick this year.
Yes.
But they do have 4 second- and third-round picks, 54, 57, 84, and 104.
Yep.
That's tied for most in the NFL in the second and third rounds. In 2019, the second round produced the player who led all rookies in receiving yards. That was A.J. Brown. Yards from scrimmage. That was Miles Sanders. And interceptions. That was a tie between Juan Thornhill and Sean Murphy Bunting. You're a big Rams fan. Let's say you get a call from a team that has a first-round pick but wants to move down in the draft. They offer you the 25th pick for 54 and 84. So the highest of your second-round picks and your third-round picks, but you would still be left with 25, 57, and 104. But in doing this deal, you moved up 25 spots, basically more than that, 28 spots. Would you do that deal? Give up a pick to move up to 25th?
I would not. Rams have multiple holes, and there is not a lot of difference with the 25th pick. The 25th pick, I think, is a bit of a crapshoot, and you want to increase your odds. In this case, I think a first round pick at that level, number 25, is overrated. Give me more picks.
You totally have the right answer here. Once you get past, and I'm not even sure you can say this isn't true with the fifth pick. Once you get past the fifth pick, everything is guessing, especially this year with no workouts, no in-person interviews. What you want are multiple picks. You want as many chances at winning the lottery as you can. And trust me, we'll go back over this draft because you can go back over any draft, and we'll look at the first round, and half of those guys will flop. the more picks you have in the second and third round, the better. The absolute right answer is to stay where you are. I hope the Rams do not move. As a matter of fact, the Raiders have two first-round picks. We have like 11 and 18. I'd like to see us trade down, like give those to teams and load it, because we got a bunch of picks late. So that's what I'd
you
like
to see.
You have
such a weird relationship with the Raiders. You just used the word us.
Yeah.
And yet 2 years ago you disowned them saying, Raiders fan anymore.
When they traded Khalil Mack. I can't quit them. That's my problem. But eventually they'll do something stupid and I'll break up with them again. I mean, the new stadium in Vegas is opening, though, so I got to give them a chance.
All right, more Fast Track is coming up for you next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, rolling on with Fast Track, and it's actually to me.
Fast Track.
All right, that's a philosophical question. This is more, yeah, let's do this. The XFL has filed for bankruptcy. John, I called this from the day the XFL was announced. I said it never had a chance, never was going to have a chance, had zero chance for success. Vince McMahon has officially crashed and burned. The XFL is dead and filed for bankruptcy for a second time. Truth is the truth. You can't compete with the NFL. But here's an idea. What if the NFL itself created its own minor league? If the NFL put its resources into a league that ran from just after the Super Bowl into the spring, could that work?
Not only could it work, it would absolutely work. You know why the WNBA works?
Because the NBA is behind it.
Correct. It wasn't going to let the WNBA fail. And no matter how much money it lost at the beginning, and it figured out a way to keep that league going. So if the NFL was behind it, and it became kind of a breeding ground, training ground for NFL players, of course it would work. Why wouldn't it?
Yeah, I wonder why they've never done it.
I don't because they have college football. College, you know, and football is the one sport where you actually pay attention to how many hits you're taking. So they have a free farm system. So, and by the way, wouldn't if they did create a professional league, which was a farm system league, wouldn't that kind of screw college football? Kids that didn't want to go to school, wouldn't they just jump to the NFL training league?
You could institute a rule. It could be the exact same rule. You can't go until after, 3 years? You got to have 3 years.
It's 3 years after your high school class starts.
3 years after your high school class. You can have the same thing. What you're actually doing is you're creating more opportunities for kids out of college to play professional football and at least have a shot to make the NFL. No, I think it would work. I don't know why the NFL hasn't done it. Yeah, the minor leagues, college football is a developmental league, but that doesn't mean you can't also have a minor league. It works in baseball.
Right.
You can have collegiate ball and you can have minor league baseball. I think it would work if the NFL did it. And by the way, it's yet another revenue stream for them.
It is, but I think it would have an effect on college football. I don't know how much college football would like it, but at the same time, the NFL doesn't owe college football anything. So if they want to start their own league, they could do it. But I mean, a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who you know is going to the NFL for sure,
right?
I think he would opt to go to the professional league just so he could make money.
But does he have 3 years?
Well,
in
if you
the
put
books?
That, but if you put that rule in, if you put the 3 year rule in, then wouldn't the only players that go to the minor leagues be players that weren't very good? Because all the best college players would go straight to the NFL, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the guys that are walk-ons, the guys who are taxi squad guys, all those guys, those 50 guys or whatever on the roster that aren't part of the 45, they would all have an opportunity to win starting jobs if they played in the minor leagues. I mean, there are plenty of jobs. And by the way, there are lots of, for example, I think there are 17 XFL players today that have signed free agent contracts with NFL teams. The XFL was not unsuccessful in developing talent. The Rams actually signed the most successful kicker in the XFL to at least audition for their kicking job this year. So you can develop more talent, and guys sometimes just need a little bit more time, get ignored during the NFL draft, don't get picked up during free agent season, and still have an opportunity to play. They may discover some diamonds in the rough.
Well, and let's face it, it gives more people a chance to live out their dream.
Yeah.
You know, it creates more jobs, so why not? Fudge?
Fast track.
Okay, Mace, let's end it with a game. I got a came out a couple of weeks ago that Dr. Anthony Fauci used to be a basketball player, a point guard. There are actually several famous people who went to medical school. Some even became doctors. So I have a game. It's multiple choice. Let's see if you guys can pick out the celebs who once went to medical school.
Okay.
All right? So Lindsay's in, Funches is in, and Mason's in. Here's question one. Before Friends became a giant hit on TV, this person was a pre-med student in college. Was it A, David Schwimmer, B, Lisa Kudrow, or C, Matthew Perry? Lindsay, Schwimmer, Kudrow, or Perry?
I think it's Lisa Kudrow.
Okay, Funch.
I'll say David Schwimmer.
Mace.
Gotta be my least favorite friend, Schwimmer.
Lindsay is correct.
Oh!
It is Lisa Kudrow. She was at Vassar studying to be a doctor and then gave it up to go into acting.
Still my least favorite friend, by the way.
Okay, before he became an NBA star, this former All-Star was studying to be a doctor. Was it A, Pau Gasol, B, Grant Hill, or C, Dikembe Mutombo? Funch, Gasol, Hill, or Mutombo?
Pau Gasol.
Mace.
Pau Gasol.
Lindsay.
Grant Hill.
The answer is Pau Gasol. Both of his parents came from the medical field in Barcelona. His mom was a doctor. His dad was a nurse practitioner. And that means this game is tied at one. All right. This famous author once studied medicine at Harvard. Was it A, Michael Lewis, B, Stephen King, or C, Michael Crichton? Mace, Lewis, King, or Crichton?
Crichton.
All right, Lindsay.
That's who I was going to guess, too, but I want to guess someone different, so King.
Okay, Funch.
I'll say Lewis.
Lindsay, you should go with your first instinct. Mace gets it. It is Michael Crichton, who, of course, wrote Jurassic Park and
wrote
a lot about
technology and, yeah, great.
He has since passed away but was pre-med at Harvard. All right, Mason 3, Mason 3, Lindsay and Funch 1. Before becoming a South American revolutionary, this guy went to med school. Was it Che Guevara, Simon Bolivar, or Emiliano Zapata? Funch, Guevara, Bolivar, or Zapata?
Guevara.
Mace.
Bolivar.
Lindsay.
Zapata.
Funches gets it. It was Che Guevara was a med student. Yeah, the first of those revolutionaries. All right, 3-2-1. This NBA star actually has a doctorate in education from Barry University. Is it A, Tim Duncan, B, Shaquille O'Neal, C, Chris Mullen? Mace, Duncan, O'Neal, or Mullen?
Wow. I'm going to say Mullen.
Okay. Lindsay.
Shaq.
Okay. Funch.
I'll say Shaq.
You guys are both right that said Shaq. Mace misses this one. Shaquille O'Neal was given an honorary doctorate in 2012 to Barry University.
I thought it was all medical doctors.
No, these can be any doctorates.
Any doctorate. Okay. Got it.
Any doctorate. Like Jerry Buss was a doctor. You know. So anybody that has a doctorate. Matter of fact, this NFL Hall of Famer received his doctorate in 1978. Is it A, Joe DeLamalur, B, Ron Yeary, or C, Alan Page? Lindsay, DeLamalur, Yeary, or Page?
I'm going to guess Page.
Okay, Funch.
Ron Yeary.
Mace.
I'm going to guess Page.
Page is the correct answer. Matter of fact, he had a juris.
He's in the Minnesota Supreme Court, isn't he?
Juris doctorate. He served for 22 years on the Minnesota Supreme Court. He is no longer on the court, but that was his life as a judge for a long time. All right, this is the last one. It's Mason 4, Funch and Lindsay 3. This one worth 2 in the whole ball game. The former world record holder in the mile run was also a neurologist. Was it A, Sebastian Coe, B, Roger Bannister, or C, Jim Ryan? Mace, Coe, Bannister, or Ryan for the win?
I'm going to go Roger Bannister.
Okay, Lindsay.
That's what I was going to guess, but I'm going to guess Ryan to be different.
Jim Ryan, Funch.
The first choice.
Sebastian Coe going for the win. Lindsay and Funch, that was an admirable try, but Mason had you from the get-go. Answer is Roger Bannister, who was, Mace, the first guy ever to what? Do you know?
Run the two-minute mile.
Four-minute mile.
Yeah, the two-minute mile would be extraordinary.
Yeah, the world record now is like 3:40, but at the time, yeah. Roger Bannister was the first one to ever break the four-minute mile, held the world record in the 50s. Coe had it in the 80s. Jim Ryan had it in the 70s. But Roger Bannister went on after that to go to med school and become a neurologist, and Mason wins the game by one.
Do you know, I'm going to throw you something weird. So, do you know what quantum mechanics is?
I could guess. I would imagine it's advanced mechanics, right? Like quantum physics?
Well, here's quantum physics. So here's an idea. This isn't really a fast-track question. I just want to throw this at you. Life is a series of decisions, and all of your decisions add up to you being here.
Okay.
Right? You being on Mason and Ireland, Voice of the Lakers.
Right.
If it hadn't have gone this way, which way do you think it would have gone? What would you be doing in an alternate universe where you didn't make this series of decisions?
I would.
By the way, I just read a book by Barry Sonnenfeld, the director, and this is one of the things he brings up all the time: is life is a series of decisions. If your decisions had gone differently, where would you be? What would you be doing now?
I would be Bill Plunkett. I'd be a sports writer.
Sports writer.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I thought I was going to do. In middle school, I wrote for the school paper. In high school, I did that. If you go look at the, you know how you write down a high school quote? If you look at my high school picture in my yearbook, my goal was to write for Sports Illustrated. Boy, the way things have gone with that magazine lately, am I glad I didn't pick that.
Yeah, really.
But that's where I thought I was going. I thought I was going to be a writer. I wanted to be Lee Jenkins.
Work for the Clippers?
No, luckily Lee went on to write for Sports Illustrated, but now he works for the Clippers. How about you? What would you do if you weren't doing radio?
I think I would be a lawyer. I'm pretty sure I would be a lawyer. I would have gone to law school, yeah, because I always had a head for it, and it was always my backup plan. And even now I wonder, because I got a real bracing education in the law from the litigation I was involved with, the antitrust litigation I was involved with. And now, even more than ever, I feel like, you know, having read so many briefs and having been in so many depositions and having been through a long trial, I think I would have been well suited to the law.
Well, one thing you learned was that I'm like, I love legal dramas, like going back to L.A. Law, The Practice, like any legal drama I'm a sucker for. The legal dramas where you see everybody arguing in court, all my friends that are lawyers tell me that is very rare, that most of the time you're at your desk working on paperwork and settlements. And that's what you found out in that trial.
Right. And the idea of an episode of Law & Order where all of a sudden they're going right to the judge and they're quickly...
Never happens that way.
No, it took 10 years.
Well, what did your case take?
10 years.
Yeah.
It took 10 years to get a verdict. It took that long.
To even get you into court. Lindsay, what would you be doing if you're not doing this?
I'd probably be a private investigator.
Really? That's interesting.
I'm really, really good at it. I'm a lot smarter than people give me credit for. And I have like this weird sixth sense, if you want to call it that. But like, I have very good instinct and I'm a very good judge of character. And I figure things out like way before most people do.
Well, and a good private investigator, can you tell when someone's lying?
Yes.
That's kind of a prerequisite for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Funch, what about you?
Oh, man, I don't even know, but I think maybe something to do with animals, like working with animals.
Be a vet?
Yeah, not a vet necessarily. Maybe
you
like,
be Tiger King.
Tiger King.
No, not that guy.
Tiger
no.
King.
Maybe like running a dog adoption something, you know, or cat adoption.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, something like that.
Funch, you could run Vanderpump Dogs and introduce me to all the hot train wrecks on Vanderpump Rules.
I would love to.
And you know what Sheena has tattooed on her forearm, Mace?
It's all happening. It's all happening.
For her, it really isn't. But you know what's happening next on this show?
Oh, I think I know.
Sliwa at sunset.
Oh, best time of day. Best time of day. Want you guys' thoughts before somebody hops on.
Yeah, we'll play Slee with those voicemails.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason, and before 6:30, we're going to play the last 3 minutes of Kobe's career as called by Michael and I, which happened exactly 4 years ago tonight.
Awesome.
Happened All April 13th, 2016.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, it is time, people. It is that special time of the night as we get started for another week. It is Sliwa at sunset. I really went all in on that one.
Mace, that was the best one you've ever done.
Yeah.
That was really good.
You know, it's a special moment for me when we pass this baton.
Because Lakers talk tonight.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, that's fitting, Alan, because it's the anniversary of Kobe's last game.
I know. It's perfect.
Were you at that game, Sliwa?
I was. Still on the business side, but I was. You know what's funny, John? There are a lot of games. Remember when you guys were on the right side of that row?
We were. We were for that game.
Yeah,
yeah,
we were.
So there are a lot of times I didn't have. You know, I wasn't doing it on a consistent basis, the media part of it yet, so I didn't have a seat or anything. So I would stand a lot of times behind Ireland and Michael Thompson, just kind of, you know, in that little alleyway, I guess you could say.
Right.
There's literally no place to watch the game. I mean, of course, you have a seat. That's a different story. But, man, I cannot stop, especially today, to even think that was 4 years ago. That just sounds crazy in itself because it does seem like it was, you know – it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. Let's put it that way. But, man, one of the most amazing events that I'll ever go to. It doesn't matter what I attend after this.
Well, you know, the thing about it, too, was that there was – it felt like a finals game because of who was in attendance. Like, everywhere you turned was somebody famous, either an ex-Laker, one of Kobe's teammates, whether it be Shaq or Rick Fox or, you know, Ron Harper or Derek Fisher – to all of the giant stars of entertainment, Kanye, Jay-Z, Snoop, George Lopez,
Nicholson.
Arsenio Hall, Nicholson in his regular seat. And so everywhere you turned, it looked like, Mace, what you and I have described so many times as a palpable buzz in the building.
It was crazy.
And that fourth quarter, which we're going to play for you, we're going to play the fourth quarter as Michael and I described it. It's only the last 3 minutes, but because of the stoppages and the free throws, it runs 11 minutes long. Well, we'll play for you here in about 20 minutes. It is, you can hear, the thing that's the coolest thing about it is you can hear the crowd willing him when he had no energy left to just keep going. And he outscored them down the stretch 11-2 with the game on the line. Alan, they were down by 15 in the fourth quarter. And everybody forgets that the game was secondary. We just all wanted to see Kobe.
Yeah.
And you hear Michael and I say, well, he's got a chance to get, at the beginning of that, he's got a chance to get 50. And then he all of a sudden starts going, and you like, could he get 60? And we start, like, you have to take him out so he can get an ovation. Like, when do you take him out? And then he just took over. It was unbelievable. And if you watch it, I sent out the feed on Twitter. One of our listeners matched up ESPN's TV feed with Michael and I's call. So if you go to my Twitter account, at LA Ireland, you can see all the reactions of people in the building jumping up and down. And there's all these great shots of Kobe's family. And Gigi is just, she's tiny when this is going on. And to think that Kobe and Gigi aren't here anymore just 4 years later is stunning. But it's so cool to watch and listen to because that's why he was Kobe. He provided us with these we'll remember that until we die, all of us.
You know, John, you mentioned like kind of think up the lead up to that game. This is it, right? I mean, Kobe gives the Lakers 20 years. This is everything that he's accomplished. It's like that game was supposed to just be one of those games where, okay, it's a commercial break. Show some highlights of Kobe Bryant on there. Let's give him as many standing ovations as possible. Let's chant Kobe's name as often as possible. Like, that's what you just thought that game was going to be. You guys remember the setup outside of Staples Center, the way they kind of everything was just completely changed. And that's the part that's so crazy to me is as the game progressed where you thought, does Kobe have a shot to get 30 points in his final game?
Oh, yeah, no, it kept, and that, it kept changing because we thought he got to 30, and we were like, God, can he get to 40? He got to 40. Can he get to 60? And it was just like, it was mind-blowing.
I mean,
unreal. To this moment, in terms of electricity in a building for a game, nothing. I've got chills talking about it right now. Nothing has ever matched that.
I was just going to say, John, the game seven against the Celtics, that was a different predicament and situation. Like, you walked into the Kobe's final game, it was a celebration, you know, where you thought, okay, well, if you lose to the Celtics, that's twice you've lost it. You were as nervous as can be. You already had this celebration type of feeling walking into that final game. And Mace, you said it perfectly. I mean, I think every fan, whether you're watching on TV or you're at the game, no way he's going to get to 40. He got to 40. Is it possible to fit? Like, just walking through those moments when it was happening, and John, you know, I've heard you and Michael's call on it a number of different times. It was truly one of those amazing events that we'll never forget.
The other thing is, will anyone ever score 60 points in their last game in an NBA game?
No.
I think the record before that was 38. Somebody had like 38 at the end of his career, you know, like Alex English or David Thompson or, you know, somebody. But 60? I mean, no way. And you know, you see people just looking on in disbelief. And, you know, the difference, Alan, you mentioned Game 7, and we were all there for Game 7 against the Celtics in 2010. That was tense. Like there was no celebration until it was over. But this was just a celebration the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like during the timeouts, people jumping up and down and dancing.
Right, because Game 7 was nerve-wracking, right?
Right.
It was like on a knife's edge the entire game. This was just a party from the beginning, and it just got better and better and better, and the guest of honor had among the most spectacular nights of his career.
Yeah, and like we didn't have time to get into this today, Mace. Maybe we can get into it tomorrow. But there have been people like as Stephen A. and Jalen suggesting that if somehow that basketball doesn't come back this year, the Lakers would have blown their chance to win a title. I completely disagree with that. I think this is the first year of something that the Lakers are building. Yeah, LeBron's a year older, but you forget Frank Vogel in his first year with this coaching staff, Anthony Davis in his first year as a Laker, LeBron with AD year one. The only thing that's holding back LeBron is that he's aged a year, but he's a freak in terms of working out.
If it doesn't happen, it won't have been a full season.
Yeah, I completely disagree with the take that some window closes if the Lakers don't get a chance to
win this year. I get it to some degree. The Warriors are going to return to being a real force in the league with Steph and Clay and Draymond. All of a sudden, they've got their pieces back together. So I think Golden State, you've added to the top four teams in the West, and I think they're going to be very, very tough again. That's a team that has gone to the finals, that group.
Yeah, how great is the West going to be next year?
Oh, yeah. Crazy.
Clippers, you know, like you're mentioning, Steve, Clippers will be better, right? Milwaukee should be better. I think when they make that case, I think this is what it comes down to more than anything else. The Lakers were rolling. You know, I think
that's
it was that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well,
they were just
those are two different arguments, though, Alan. They're two different arguments. One to say that the Lakers' best chance to win is this year, maybe. But to argue that their window closes if they don't is a completely different argument.
Yeah, that's wrong.
What are you talking about? They got Anthony Davis and LeBron, and they've got a coach who's now implemented his system, and everybody knows what's expected of them. Coming off of the weekend they had before the season shut down, where they beat Milwaukee on a Friday and the Clippers on Sunday, I would list them right at the top of the list as favorites to whenever they pick back up.
What's interesting is they got a whole bunch of free agents. That's what's interesting. Now, I don't know how free agency is going to move next year, but they're going to have to probably reassemble the roster to some degree.
But isn't every team going to have to do that?
Yeah, every team is. But but a lot of teams have more players locked in than just two. I mean, the Lakers have the big two locked in plus Danny Green, but everything else is pretty fluid.
Right,
they've got three players with JaVale's got a deal, So they got three players, and somehow Luol Deng's still getting five. I'm just looking at their side. Somehow Luol Deng's still getting $5 million next year.
Actually, next year, too? Yeah, next year. Yeah. Well,
and you know, the year after.
Actually, I think one of Rob Pelinka's greatest accomplishments as the Lakers GM in the short three-year tenure that he's had is to get out of the Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng deals. I still don't know how he did it.
And well, think about it. The Mozgov deal has been traded twice since they traded it, and then it got traded again.
Like, to do that and have the best record in the West 2 years later is stunning. That's why I think Rob should be executive of the year if they award it. I don't know if they will with the shortened season. But nobody knows how big of – like, if you look at those contract – Mace, how many shows did we do where we said that is the – you know, Mitch Kupchak left us two – insanely untradeable contracts. Mm-hmm.
Right.
They will never be able to get rid of those. And Rob got rid of both of them before they were up.
So Sliwa, we had a voicemail a little bit earlier.
Two of them about you.
Can you cue that up? The Sliwa-isms people are picking up from you now.
Yeah, go ahead, Funch. You got those?
I got them.
Okay, play the first one.
Hi, guys. This is Lori in Westminster. I heard you start a list of Sliwa-isms yesterday, and I wondered if you have your guys's on the list. You should. He says it quite often, as he did last night, in I want to know your guys's opinion on this. I've never heard anyone else say that. Have you?
Alan, so
let's
answer her question. We've never heard anyone else say that. Have you?
Just me. No, I have not. I have not. I guess I'm the only one. I guess I'm the only one.
What does it mean? Your guys' opinion. Is that like a group plural? You guys'?
Do I say that? I don't even know if I say that.
You do. You say your guys' opinion.
And how do you spell you guys'?
It's your guys'.
Okay, so I don't say your guys' opinion.
No, you say your guys' opinion.
No, Alan, you just say, I want your opinion. You don't even need the word guys'. But is guys's G-U-Y-S apostrophe?
Yeah, your guys's opinion. S apostrophe.
I guess I'll have to write it out next time as I'm reading my notes and figure it out.
You can completely eliminate the word. You just say, hey, next I want your opinion. You say, next I want your guys's opinion.
See,
you're putting in a completely unnecessary word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You are a big you know guy. Now I don't mean like you know. I mean like you know what's funny, guys?
I am. John. That's true.
You know Mace. You know Sliwa.
You know you never know until you know, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other question, because we're gonna get out of here and we're gonna make room for the final moments of the Kobe 60-point game. Is anybody gonna hop on tonight or jump on?
Just they're going to join the show. That's it. They're just going to join the show.
Alan, and we had one more voicemail about you and your tendency to say people's initials. Funch, play that one.
Hey, what's up, J.I. and S.M.? This is M.L. Hey, I don't know what that guy was talking about, but I love you guys, and I love that crosstalk with S.A.S. And just really quick, I want to let you know, with sports gone, but still a huge fan of the L.A.L.s, big fan of L.B.J., AD, KCP, AC, all those guys, big fan of the past, KAJ, EMJ, JW, you know, baseball, big LAA guy, not an LAD guy, so, and not an LAR guy, sorry SM, but I'm a SF Niner fan, so, you know, but keep up the good work, you guys are doing great, just in case you guys want to check out the best initial movie clip, the movie scene ever, Robin Williams, Good Morning Vietnam. Peace out, guys. Have a great day.
There you go.
Just right. So,
demolished.
Alan, is tonight
demolished here.
Is tonight the night that MT comes on the show?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
So he's right. going to. What time is he hopping on?
I'm going to play him the voicemail, the original voicemail, and we'll get his take on it.
All right. So, Alan, coming up next is the final 3 minutes of Kobe Bryant's NBA career, which happened on this day, April 13th. 2016, 4 years ago tonight. And then, Alan, after that, you take it with Sliwa at Sunset.
And then tomorrow, Bob Bradley from LAFC will join us, and Adam Schefter will be on the show, too. Excellent. He'll hop on.
All right, have a good show, Alan.
All right, see you, Sliwa.
All right, Mace.
Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.